Welcome everyone into another episode of the Fantasy Sports Rants podcast. It's your host Chris Heil, and tonight I have a guest, author, multiple fantasy winner, BJ Riddell. BJ, how are you doing tonight?
Chris, great. How are you, man?
I'm doing awesome. I'm very excited to have you on the podcast once again. If you want, let everyone know a little bit about yourself, what you're doing, and how you've gotten a name for yourself in the fantasy industry.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I wrote a book a few years ago called Fantasy Football for Winners. I had found some success doing fantasy sports back in the, back in the 90s and the 2000s. I'd won a couple national fantasy baseball competitions. Never football. I came in 19th one time out of about 200,000 people in fantasy football. But I started to realize that there's something to it. There's a skill involved. It's not just luck. Wrote a book about it. Now I do a blog, followed by about 3,000 people. Really just an opportunity to discuss kind of different ways to approach analyzing players. And a lot of it is the basic stuff that all of us know. But sometimes it's that little tiny thing. And just one quick example would be last year, Jeremy Hill, when Giovanni Bernard was questionable for whatever it was, week 11, I pounced on it on my website and just said, everyone has to pick up or trade for Jeremy Hill. He was kind of a forgotten second tier guy there in Cincinnati behind Bernard, and I insisted that based on my metrics, Hill was going to be a stud the rest of the way, and that's how it worked out. It doesn't always go that way, but my approach is, you got to lay yourself on the line. If you're right, you're right. If you're wrong, you got to admit it. And hopefully you're right more often than you're wrong.
Oh, my gosh. You're bringing back so much memories of Jeremy Hill last year. I live about 30 minutes outside of Cincinnati. So a lot of my friends in my home league are Cincinnati Bengal homers. And so I was trying to trade everything for Jeremy Hill. I knew that he was going to have a touchdown. I was getting ready to look it up and see what he did because I think he had a touchdown that game, if not two. And I was trying to go all in on him because I was like, I knew once he started rolling, he was going to be good. And I saw all the upside in the world for him. And sure enough, he blew up. And I was so angry. You can't talk to a homer into trading something which they think is gold.
That's right. That's exactly right, which is why you need diversity and geographic diversity in your fantasy league. You got to make sure that you have enough homers out there that if you've got a cowboy on your team who's overperforming and you know they're going to bust out later in the season or the opposite, if they're going to tank them later in the season, you can play that off at different people in your league and take advantage. Cincinnati, I got a bunch of friends who are huge Reds, Bengals fans, and in the third round they're drafting Andy Dalton. If you can get homers throughout your roster, throughout your league, you're going to win almost every round in your draft if you're playing savvy enough.
I actually think the real reason I got into fantasy football is I'm a big Cleveland Browns fan. And I've owned one Cleveland Brown my entire fantasy time. I've owned their defense a couple times, but Josh Gordon's about the only relevant player I've ever owned.
How long have you been a Browns fan? Your whole life?
Too long, honestly. I have so many jerseys. It's disgusting. I have jerseys on jerseys on jerseys. And every year I tell my wife, I'm like, hey, you going to wear a Browns t-shirt or sweatshirt on Sunday? And she said no. She told me this year if they make the playoffs, she will wear a jersey every day for the following season. But I can't get her to put anything on. She says she's embarrassed. She gets made fun of.
I guess she's being honest about it.
She is. So let's go ahead and get into the heart of the show. On your blog, you were talking about DeMarco Murray and how he could have a potential decline for this upcoming season.
Yeah.
And I threw out a couple points, and I wanted to kind of hear you out on why you think that he's going to decline instead of do better with the Chip Kelly offense.
This is no knock on Chip Kelly or that offense. I think you made some good points on the blog, and everyone listening should listen to Chris. Chris was the only person last year out of 100 experts on Fantasy Pros who picked the Raiders in whatever, week 15, to be a top 10 defense, and he was right. So hats off to Chip.
Yeah.
So I took your comments seriously. Chip Kelly is Murray has ended up in a place where he needs to be if he's going to match or exceed what he did last year. My push is that I don't think it's possible to match or exceed, regardless of the offense he's in, based on a few factors. And one is, you look at all the guys who have had as many carries as DeMarco Murray had last year. There have been six who have had as many or more, right up through Larry Johnson, who I think had 417. And four of those six guys completely petered out the next year. Couldn't even finish the seasons. They just had ugly, ugly years. We're talking like 300 yards rushing, kind of ugly. Two of the guys managed decent years with about 25% drop-off, and then completely the wheels fell off the cart the following year. So I think when you look at what Murray did last year, it was 449 touches in terms of carries and receptions. And 449 is an ungodly amount of touches, and it does a real wear and tear on your body. And I think that Murray coming into last season, because he was such an injury risk and he made it through, doesn't mean we should forget about the DeMarco Murray of old, which is that he's still known to be somewhat fragile. He actually almost had to sit out a game or two last year with that. I think it was a broken hand or some kind of busted hand. And he still played through it, and I really think it was because he was looking at the record book. And I really think he wanted to push himself to make this the year that he was going to get a huge contract and make a name for himself. But I think it's going to come back to bite Philly. And the last big issue, and another person pointed this out on my blog, and I didn't have the space to talk about all of it, but this person deserves hats off, was obviously Ryan Matthews. He gets about $11 million contract from Philly. You've got Darren Sproles. Between those two guys, when you look at their last full season, Matthews 2 years ago, Sproles last year, they combined for about 400 touches. So I know those two guys are not going to have as many touches this year as they had in their last full seasons, but you can't discount the fact that Ryan Matthews is going to play a significant role, 10 to 14 touches a game, I think, and Sproles will probably have 5 to 7. And I really think we're looking at Murray getting no more than 17 to 20 touches a game. That means maybe 14 to 16 carries and a few receptions. And I think they're going to try to ease him and make sure he stays healthy and get him for the playoffs. Counter that. I want to hear what you're going to say.
Okay, so I did a quick calculation on what you think. So you're having DeMarco Murray right around 250 carries. Is that right for the season?
That's right. I think he's going to have 275 to 325 touches. And you're exactly right, that comes to about 250 carries, which I think puts him in a position where he's not going to completely where he's going to lose a limb or something trying to play.
Well, most of the time when I talk with people, I just jot down a couple notes, but I have two pages here to talk about DeMarco Murray with you. I did my research with them. So despite being labeled as an injury prone, Murray has only missed two games in his past two seasons. So he didn't miss a game last year. Granted, he had the broken hand. Pulled through it, though, showed his toughness. He missed two games in 2013, so I think that's pretty impressive. In the last two seasons, he also totaled 719 total touches. That is quite a bit. And I, like you said, he had over 400 touches last year. I understand why you're concerned about that. But he's quick, he's elusive, and he's finished second in total missed tackles last year with 85. So not just to mention that he's getting through the line, it's showing that he's able to have missed tackles. He's not just relying on the number one offensive line to get him through those things. Now, Chip Kelly uses his offense differently, where he likes to throw a lot. He likes to – the pace is different, which, again, could be a concern. But the offensive line was a top two last year in the rankings, and I think, according to Pro Fantasy Focus, they are pretty reputable. They have the offense as of the 2015 as third as far as run blocking. So as far as DeMarco Murray, you don't have to be too concerned of that he's going to get hit in the back of or in the backfield, things like that. He's going to get to the line of scrimmage because the offensive line's good. Then again, he also has the elusiveness to break away long touchdowns. So I like all this. My big concerns with him are Sproles on third down. We all know Sproles is going to come in. He's going to be that scat back. He's going to do what Darren Sproles does. And then you also have to worry about rotating Matthews in. So the big thing we talked about in the blog was you didn't think he would be able to sustain the 4.7 yards a carry.
That's right.
I agree with you. I think a low 4.0 around there for average, but he's going to have a high touchdown total. When I did my calculations, I figured about 300 carries for him. I'm a little higher than you, but I still think he's going to be the main workhorse. He's going to have, I figure, about 20-ish something carries a game, and I figured about 1,300 rushing yards. So when I did that, when I figured all that out, it came out to 4.3, which I think is a very good expectation for him. Except for I see him as a 10-touchdown guy at least.
So you see him inside the five, you think a lot of the time they'll be looking to Murray.
I do. I don't think they're going to pass a lot. They could pass a little more, but I don't think that's going to be their big thing. Why wouldn't you give it to – I need to pull up the stats of where LeSean McCoy was given the ball a lot inside the red zone also. And I think they're going to do the exact same thing. They're going to give it to him inside, pound the ball, and I think he's also going to have an additional 30 to 40 catches on the season too. I don't think he's going to be a number – he might not finish as a running back one as a top 12 guy. I think he'll be very close. I think he can finish number 10. I think he can finish as high as 5. I don't think he'll be in the top 5. But I think he's going to be a very, very great running back too. And that's where he's being drafted right now in drafts. If you can get someone like a Jamaal Charles and you can go ahead and in the swing get someone like DeMarco Murray, or you can get Le'Veon Bell and DeMarco Murray because he's going to be falling in drafts, I like that. I think that's a very great strategy to go ahead and get someone who's reliable like Murray.
I will agree with you that I think if you can get, you know, an elite running back in Murray, I wouldn't pass that up just for the chance, because, you know, if you can get Murray fly into the end of the second round, where you can get him. I'm not talking about 18 leagues, but if, you know, you're talking 12-team leagues, 14-team leagues, if Murray flies, that would be appealing to me. And for the primary reason that Ryan Matthews is no lock to stay healthy either. Ryan Matthews has more injury risks probably than DeMarco Murray. It's just that he's not going to be the workhorse, so I'm not as concerned. But I will give you that. I think that Murray has the potential to be easily a top 15 running back, maybe a top 12. I could give you top 10, but I think that when you're talking about getting a guy in the late first or early second round, which is probably where he's going a lot based on his ADP, I think it's very risky to take a guy who puts so much mileage on himself that the risk is there. And here's something, and I want to be humble about this. I don't want to make it sound bigger than it is. But a couple of years ago in the preseason, I had first started my blog, and I made 10 bold predictions. I do that every preseason. And then, you know, I let them ride. And if I'm right, I'm right. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. And that first year, one of my predictions was that Adrian Peterson would not be the top 4 running back, fantasy running back. And it was on my blog. I tweeted the hell out of it, talked about it on radio. And my basic reasons were that this was a guy who had almost 400 touches. He'd never come close to that before in his career. He'd rushed for almost 2,100 yards. His yards per carry were 20% above his career average. He'd rushed 6 yards a carry. And my theory was you can't expect a guy to put that much mileage on himself and not have some level of regression. And my point was, I don't want to touch him in the first round because I don't want to be stuck with a guy who has that kind of mileage on him from the year before. And it turned out, you know, that worked out. Peterson still had a good year. He had 1,200 something yards, 10 TDs, but he wasn't a number 1 overall pick. He was probably a number 8 overall pick in terms of where his final standings were. And people who passed up on McCoy and other guys like that to get him, you know, or Peyton Manning, they paid the price. So this is how I view DeMarco Murray this year. This year's version of Adrian Peterson, but with a little more fragility in terms of his history than even AP had.
the big difference between Murray and Peterson is their definitely their style of running. Peterson is a runner who looks, it almost looks like he wants the contact. He lowers his shoulder, yeah, wants to run the guy over. And I agree with you with that, where that does take a toll on your body. But like I mentioned with DeMarco and his elusiveness, he gets hit on the sides, different things like that, because I think that's something that really he worked on in the offseason of last year, was he was not getting hit head on, those hits on the shoulders, different things like that. He's getting hit more on the side, where he would move a little bit to the left when someone's tackling him, just so he wouldn't sustain a huge blow to his body. And I think that has to do with a lot of it. And you'll notice that, yeah, when you look at film, you'll kind of see that in him, where other running backs may not do that, where they just take that whole blow and they think they can run over him, over a guy, and they don't. But I think it's smart what he's doing. I want to ask you a question here.
Yeah, sure.
All right, so when you draft a guy, and I was talking with someone about this the other day, when you draft a guy, let's say you draft Antonio Brown. When you draft a guy high in your fantasy draft, knowing that he's not going to finish as the number one overall player, why would you take him? Because I've talked to people, and they say, I'm taking Jamaal Charles because he's going to finish this season as the number one player. I think it's silly to think like that. And I want to know, what do you think when you draft these guys, they're going to finish number one, or are you looking to just hit maybe a top five value? What is your goal when you draft someone high?
Well, yeah, it's a really, really good question. What comes to mind as you're talking about it is that I think what I'm trying to do each round is win each round. If I'm in a 12-team league, ideally I want to have the best player in each round. Realistically, I'm hoping to have a top four guy in each round, because I can feel very comfortable if I can get a top four guy for each round that goes by. I'm getting great value that's going to prepare me for the playoffs. I'm not having any bust. Like, I had a very bad draft a couple years ago, and I had to completely remake my team because I thought I won most of the rounds, and it turned out very quickly by week one that I had lost those rounds. But I had some chips that I could, you know, cash in on. Like, Jared Cook had a 160-yard, one TD game for the Rams, whatever, or the Titans, whoever he was for at that point. And I ditched him, and I did a mammoth trade involving Jared Cook, and I got an elite receiver in return. But, you know, you never know how it's going to work out. But you're right. I'm not sitting there thinking I'm getting the best guy. Antonio Brown's a good example. 2 years ago when I did the eight, and this is all going to sound very forced, but, you know, Antonio Brown was a guy 2 years ago who was completely off the fantasy radar. He was a top 25 guy in a lot of preseason rankings. I ranked him top eight in mine. And I went out on a limb and said, here's a top eight guy. And then I practiced what I preached, and I drafted him in both my drafts. Once in the sixth round in one of my drafts, and the other one was an auction league, and I drafted him for $2.
Wow.
Towards the end of the draft, because he was considered an afterthought. And in the sixth round, when he fell to me, I knew I had to grab him, because I knew at that point, even if he didn't meet the expectations I had the number one receiver on a decent offensive team. Of course I'm going to take that receiver, because that's going to give me the best value that I could think of in that round. People were taking Jay Cutler. You know, they were taking the 18th best running back or the 23rd best running back. I wanted a guy who could be an elite receiver. So to reframe your question, or to frame my answer in response to your question, I would say I want a guy who has a high probability of being elite at that position. Maybe he won't be, but I'd rather go for broke on five guys in rounds one through five, believing what I believe, than playing it safe and saying, I better take this guy's handcuff, or I haven't taken a quarterback yet, I need to take Cam Newton just because he's available. Instead of taking a step back and saying, is Cam Newton really the best value at this spot, or is there someone else out there who could give me eighth-round value but could give me second-round value, depending on whether he wins the running back battle. And that's the guy I want. That's my take.
Very interesting. I got asked this question, especially last year. I had Matt Forte as my number one overall player. And I got a lot of crap. And I got a lot of crap on it. And they're like, why would you do that? And I had to give the stats of how, Mark Trestman, different things like that. But I said, even if he doesn't finish as number one overall, which I didn't think he would, I thought he'd finish as a top five-ish. And
right.
that's how I make my picks, and that's how I do my rankings is I go for a guy like Antonio Brown. I consider him a safe play where I know what I'm getting out of him. I know I'm getting this value, whether it's I know he's going to guarantee me 20 points every week at this value. I think that's a smart and safe pick for a first round. And that's how I was doing my picks. I looked at someone like LeSean McCoy, Jamaal Charles, and I said, I think Matt Forte is the safer pick where he is the only guy in that backfield, and I can rely on him. So that's why I wanted to ask you what maybe your stance was on it, because I am totally different, and I got a lot of crap last year about it.
And I really like that Matt Forte pick actually this year. I think that Forte is one of those intriguing guys who is going to be off the radar primarily because last year was such a mess in Chicago. But when you look at the potential for Forte, as integral as he is to that offense, there's no one competing. So you talk about a guy who he's the main guy in Chicago. There's very few running backs who don't have a very, very clear upstart who's going to come in and take 6 to 8 touches, you know, by week 3 every game. Forte is one of those 4 guys, roughly, in the league. Last year he rushed, I'm looking it up, 3.9 yards a carry, which was, you know, the worst since 2009. He is due for a rebound, and I would say what you did, if you look at what he did the year before, he put up, you know, really elite numbers in 2013. There's no reason to think he wouldn't do that in 2014. The team pretty much, I won't say gave up, that would be rude to say, but they were out of it.
They were.
And that, I think that does something to a team. I think it changes the complexion. I think it changes the play calling. And it changes, suddenly, are you a little more concerned about getting hurt than you would have been otherwise? Because you want to make sure you make it through the season so you can have an off season, recuperate, and hopefully come back and have a better team next year. And I think Forte is a – if I had the first overall pick this year, I'd be very tempted to take Matt Forte because I think he'll be a top 3 guy this year.
Well, I pulled up, I suppose, as we talk about often, there's one guy who has Matt Forte ranked number 1 overall. And there's one guy, his lowest ranking is number 12. So one person has the number 1, 2 people who have number 2, 2 people that have him 3, and then from there on, he goes further and further down. He's majority of them 6, 7, 8, right around in there, where people are just ranking him safely, and they're not picking, thinking he's either going to decline or excel. So it's pretty interesting.
That is interesting.
That's where
the value comes in. I mean, if you've got the 9th overall pick and you can grab Matt Forte, I would say that's okay. Obviously, and you know, we're people listening are smart people. We're smart people. We know if you have your eye set on Matt Forte and you get the 9th pick, I think that's better than having the 3rd pick and having your eye on Matt Forte, because you're getting then much better value in the 2nd round and you're getting the same guy. And this is a year when it's very important for people who are drafted in the latter half of the 1st round to really identify the guys who everyone's going to wish that they had picked in the 1st round, at the very least who could neutralize whatever early 1st round guys people are taking. And I would put Forte at or near the top of that list because he's coming in so underrated. I would say LeSean McCoy is coming in underrated. It's a little more of a question mark with him because of Fred Jackson, because of the Bills offense, you know, but there's guys out there who I think were so you know, Calvin Johnson, another guy, underperformer last year primarily because he got hurt. Matt Stafford last year, although he's nowhere near a top few round guy, but Stafford, I wrote it on my blog a few days ago, I see him as a potential top 5 quarterback because the weapons are there between Golden Tate and Calvin Johnson. So it's really all about finding the best value. And when you bring up that Forte, it strikes a nerve. I feel like he's a guy I don't want people talking about too much because I like him so much and I want to make sure I can get him late in the 1st round.
When you go to Fantasy Pros and you click on a player, you can also look at their projections. So I'm looking at their projections here, and they have Matt Forte at 256 attempts. To me, that's extremely low. They have 1,000 yards. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead. Your turn.
Oh, no, it seems, and I'm sorry I cut you off. That seems lazy on their part. I mean, it's showing then a gradual decline in carries.
Who would be getting those carries then?
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't make sense. You've lost one of your two biggest aerial weapons in Brandon Marshall, and the team clearly needs Matt Forte, who probably has two great years left, based on his utilization and throughout his career, which has been pretty conservative the way he's been utilized. And coming off a down year, there's no way he's getting 256 carries. I think he's pushing 280, and he's just as involved in the passing game as ever before. He's probably getting 80 to 90 receptions because they're going to need him. This is a guy who could realistically get 2,000 all-purpose yards. He's come close two years in a row. You just add in a couple more scores, and he's suddenly an early first-rounder.
You're 100% right. They had him ranked they have receptions at 68.7. I think that's pretty fair, honestly. Last year, I believe he had over 100 receptions for a running back, which is incredible. He either had 100 receptions or 100 targets. I don't remember. I want to say he had the receptions, though.
I think it was receptions, yeah.
Yeah. And then they had about 600 yards receiving. So I think they're dead on with the receiving part. It's just the rushing that is a little mind-boggling to me at 250. I think that I would expect anywhere from 275 to 300, and they're just going to need him to carry the ball. And when they're out of games, they're going to throw it to him also.
Yeah, that's right.
And so that was the big thing about him last year is when they were down, which was awesome for Matt Forte's owners, you knew he was getting the ball.
That's right, as opposed to a lot of other teams where if you're down, they bring in the running back there, the decoy or the block, and you're not getting the kind of carries. Forte is so versatile out of the backfield, catching balls. And let's face it, he makes Cutler look decent. You put any other running back in that backfield, let's say a very run-heavy running back is really not known as a pass catcher, and suddenly Cutler's numbers go down about 20%. And, there is a symbiotic relationship between Forte and Cutler, and I think Cutler getting re-signed is bad for Chicago if you're a Bears fan, but it's good for Forte owners because you get a guy who clearly has good chemistry with you.
I pulled up the numbers for last year, and Matt Forte actually had 266 attempts last year, which I think I was surprised it was that low, but
it's going to be even lower. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Because he started off the season with 17, 12, 13 attempts. He even had one game where he only had 5 attempts. He must have got hurt that game.
Yeah.
I don't remember him getting banged up. But still, I think that's dramatically low. He had, looking at his stats here, he had three games last year of over 20 carries. So
yeah.
I think he's going to be used in that offense a lot more. I'm 100% with you on this.
Yeah. I think go ahead.
No, go ahead. I want to hear what you just said,
I was just thinking one of the biggest mistakes people make is thinking that the previous year's stats are the metric for, to be analyzed for what this year's stats will be. And you could learn 100 different, fantasy point totals for the 100 best players, and you're going to find that at least half of them are markedly different the next year, 10 to 20% off, either higher or lower. And so people get so caught up, not everyone, some people, on previous year stats, and I think it's healthy to be a contrarian when it comes to looking at previous year stats, understanding why those stats existed, what criteria was there, and how this year might be different in terms of offensive line, in terms of other personnel, whatever, age, injury history, whatever, and then understand, is this a trend, or is this just one of those things that this year everyone will realize that was just an anomaly? And the trend versus anomaly thing is something that a lot of people get caught up on. They think that whatever happened the year before is the start of or continuation of a trend, and it's hard for people sometimes to spot the anomalies. I think anyone out there who can spot a few anomalies you know, the surprise of Antonio Brown jumping out 2 years ago, or Michael Floyd being a big-time player, you know, a couple years ago, came out of nowhere, or Keenan Allen have a down year last year. He was heavily targeted. He drew a ton of offensive pass interferences, but couldn't really find the end zone and couldn't gain the yardage that was expected. Hey, Keenan Allen was a, you know, top 12 guy going into last season, top 15, and he completely tanked. Anyone who saw that Alfred Morris was going to, you know, have a regression. So if you can figure out, I'm not saying I got at least half of those wrong that I just mentioned, but if people can understand the anomaly, that is, they're on their way to a championship. If they're
absolutely
not making 20 mistakes that other people are making.
Then what you started with was, you know, comparing last year's stats and hold it, or, and thinking those are going to be this season's stats is just silly to me. I use last season's stats as a starting point. I look at what they did, and then I think to myself, do I see progress this year or a decline? And then I go from there. I like to see, like I said, I look at his carries, and then I start to think 266, I see more. You know, I look at the pass, I saw 130 targets for last year. I see a decline in that. I see maybe 100 targets, and he could get, like you said, around 70 catches. I think that's a little more reasonable. And you have to think like that. He had 800 receiving yards last year. I wouldn't be surprised if he was around the 500-600 for this season. You have to figure a little decline in the passing game, a very big incline in the running game. But that's
right,
where you have to try to figure those out, and you need to, as not just a fantasy player, but like as in general, you need to look at those where you look at guys from ESPN. What they're doing, in my opinion, is just giving you the basic stuff, and it's your opinion to go from there. When they give you their
top 10,
move around to the guys. You know, when you get a guy who's number 10, it doesn't mean he's always going to be there, and every draft is completely different. So,
that's right. I couldn't agree with you more. Pierre Garçon was a really fashionable pick last year. And I got into a great discussion with a guy at work last preseason. He's like, look, Pierre Garçon, I was telling him, look, this is an entirely different year because DeSean Jackson was not on the team the year before. You've got a guy like DeSean Jackson who's been paid a lot of money to catch balls. And I wrote on my blog that Pierre Garçon was going to be one of my big busts for the year because you can't look at the previous year's stats where you have 178 targets and say, yeah, this is what's going to happen. I said he's going to get about 110 targets. And as a result, he's going to get about 70 catches or 60 catches. And he's not going to be worth a third or fourth round pick where everyone's taking him. And I think, you know, people, just like you said, ESPN was all on the Pierre Garçon bandwagon because I think a lot of the big players in the industry are afraid to buck what seems obvious because they're afraid of being, you know, ostracized or vilified or you know, made fun of, whatever, for ruining people's drafts or not being savvy enough to make it in this league. And they're not really being challenged at the end of the season when so many of their predictions are wrong. Anyone can go through and look at weekly predictions, let's say for ESPN. I'm not just knocking ESPN. I wrote this in my book. I did a two-year study of ESPN, a two-year study of another site, of CBS Sports, and what I found was approximately 50% of the time, give or take a couple percent, when they pick a guy who's going to be a top 10 positional performer in a given week, only 5 of those guys out of 10 are actually going to be in the top 10. And the other 5 are not. And most of those guys who are not generally are not even close. Because that's what happens. And that's why, frankly, I had not done weekly ranking, you know, in my fantasy football career, because it is so hard to do weekly ranking. Top 10, how can you possibly guess the 10 guys who are going to be the 10 best at position? I'd rather look at 2 guys who are overrated and 2 guys who are underrated because, you know, fantasy football is not about putting all 10 of your wide receivers in active, say, great, I've got the top 10 guys. It's about going out and saying, ooh, this guy's on waivers. I get an immediate upgrade, potentially, if I add this guy and start him this week. That's the value that you bring. And I think ESPN and other folks could take a lesson from a lot of the other folks like you and me who are talking about individual players and not just aggregating all the numbers and saying, here's your full list. run with it, because so often they're going to be flat out wrong.
And I actually do weekly and seasonal rankings, and I think they're so difficult because when I start ranking these guys, it's like, I think this guy's going to be good. And I was like, it just depends. If he falls in the draft, I would take him more. And it's just really difficult for me when I do those, and I get really frustrated because I think there's different values when you put these guys into to rankings. They're not just a number there, because if this guy falls at this specific spot in the draft, I think he's worth taking. But you may want to take him earlier if wide receivers are taken earlier, or there's just so many different variables.
That's right.
One thing I wanted to say real quick, and I'll let you go after this, BJ. I know we're running close on time. I've noticed, and this is not just the bigger sites, this is just the industry in general. I saw an article today that, trying to think who it was, CJ Spiller is going to be a potential sleeper. I've seen it several times already, and I just don't see why everyone jumps on the same boat. It's not one, I'm not going to say any site in general was doing this, but I've seen five or six sites talking about CJ Spiller and different analysts saying that this guy is going to be a huge sleeper this year, and I'm just almost dumbfounded by why.
Yeah.
I think one person jumps on the boat, and then everyone else is just paddling along with them.
That's a good observation, because I think that does happen. So many people are reading the same information, and I'm not going to say they don't think for themselves, but I think they allow themselves to be influenced too much by one site or one piece of news. Last year I got a bunch of stuff wrong last year, so I don't want to make it sound like I get a lot of stuff right. But you bring me on your show, so I get a chance to at least show that I can provide some value occasionally. But in one of my two leagues that I did last year, I intentionally waited on running backs because my research showed that Mark Ingram and Ahmad Bradshaw were hugely undervalued. And I thought, if I can get these guys in double-digit rounds in my leagues, and one of them, the draft was way too early. I hadn't done my research yet. It was in late May. But the other one was in July. And Ingram and Bradshaw carried in that league, two guys who I drafted in like the 10th and 13th rounds, because it wasn't just one person out there saying, these guys are underrated. It was listening to local reporters on the radio, reading their stuff. It was looking at the statistics and the coaching philosophies, the offensive lines, and the competition, and understanding what's the likelihood that these two guys are going to be 200 carry guys, 200 attempt guys. And it worked out until both of them got hurt. I think that I'm mixed on Spiller right now. I don't have a strong opinion. I think he's 26 on ADP, average draft position for running back. I think anyone who's high on Spiller probably doesn't think Mark Ingram is capable of getting through a whole season, and that leaves Spiller and Kyrie Robinson. And Spiller in Buffalo, I guess people are thinking, Spiller in Buffalo is very different than Spiller in New Orleans. New Orleans is not going to be the same kind of attack that they've had previous year, this year. Because supposedly they're going to focus more on the run.
Mm-hmm.
But until Ingram gets hurt, I don't think Ingram's going to lose the job on merit. Ingram is a very, very good runner. And I think New Orleans realized that last year, and that's why they kept him. And they might still get rid of Kyrie Robinson, from what I last read. But Spiller provides a safety net. And until Ingram gets hurt, I can't see Spiller getting more than 10 touches a game. And the Spiller of 3 years ago, I think, could still exist in the right system. But a few things have to break his way for that to happen. And I would say he's more of a gamble right now at the 26 ADP than he is a sure thing at 26 ADP. I think when you talk about a sleeper, I'm thinking 20% chance that he finishes in the top 15, which put him in sleeper category. I just don't see cards breaking his way this season, but...
Especially when they're saying he's a sleeper at 26, I think there's other guys. Like LeGarrette Blount is number 29 on ADP, and I think that he holds up value, especially being the potential starter in New England.
Yeah, that doesn't
and that's
make
what
sense.
Me neither.
You've just isolated, I guess, why people are looking at two different players, and there's no continuity between the two. There's no understanding that I'd rather have a starter, even if Belichick, you know, goes back and forth with Blount. The fact is, Blount has proved to be a touchdown machine, and he's going to get the ball inside the 3-yard line more than any other running back, and probably more than Tom Brady's going to throw it at his age, and with the risk involved in Brady near the goal line setting up for a pass. I don't think they want Cam at the goal line in that sense. But Spiller is not a guy right now who we're looking at as being a goal line carrier. So what value does he bring unless he's getting some breakaway tackles? And that's a huge gamble to make. I would probably pick him as a top 30 guy if I'm feeling confident, but I wouldn't feel comfortable with a top 15 guy. I agree with you on that.
Yeah, I am 100% on the Mark Ingram boat here. I think he has potential for a breakout season. He has everything in place. They drafted another lineman. They traded and got another lineman. Last year, I think he finished as the number 12 back. I could be wrong, and
yeah.
I don't have the stats up in front of me. But so he finished as the number 12 back. He has every chance to get more carries this upcoming season and produce more. He may not have the fancy numbers, but he's going to get the rock or the ball a ton, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I think you're right. If he stays healthy, he should be the workhorse.
And so, BJ, with that, we're going to go ahead and sign off here. I want to thank you for – you even stayed on a little longer than I was expecting, so I appreciate talking it up with me, and I'm going to have you on hopefully sometime before the season starts. It's always fun to talk with you, and we just keep going back and forth.
Cool. Same here, Chris. I appreciate it. I appreciate where you're coming from on issues, and it's good to debate this stuff. I think it's healthy for people to listen. There's always different answers to the same question, but a lot of it comes down to the why. And I appreciate where you're coming from on the why and a lot of these things, including DeMarco Murray.
And so, again, you could check out BJ's book, which I am a proud owner of. And I would say it's more of you learn, but I think I'm laughing more than I'm doing anything than learning in the book, honestly. So I want to. So make sure you check out his book. It's in the description of here. And, again, you're listening to the Fantasy Sports podcast. And everyone have a great night.